August blends up and quorum
Methodist queen works only case.
Let's cut the bull.
Thanks for tuning in to Rebellion Radio, the Hunger Games podcast. Hello and welcome to Rebellion Radio episode 28 for August 12th, 2012. I'm your host, Alex Volova.
I'm Elena Thomas.
And I'm Ipo Grisanti.
So you may notice a certain lack of hostiness in this episode. And that's because for the first time ever, this show will be Hurley-less, as he is overseas and having major technical difficulties. But no, no more, because this is the day that Alex takes over the role as host of Rebellion Radio.
And I'm back, so I can fill his position of...
Oh yeah, and Elena's returned.
Oh!
This is going to be a very interesting episode, considering that I haven't really hosted before. So, let's get into it. So first off, we have the news, and our first tidbit is that Lynn Cohen has been cast as Mags. So what do you guys think of this?
Cool.
I like it.
Yeah, she definitely Shows has good. The right old lady look to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so our next bit of news, please tell them, Elena.
All right, so Patrick St. Esprit, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, has been cast as Romulus Thread, and so...
Recently, he has been in Super 8, he has been on the television show Sons of Anarchy, so...
Yeah, but he's cast Romulus Thread, for people who don't remember, is the head peacekeeper in District 12.
Yeah, so he's the one that causes, you know, all the... troubles in District 12. He's the one who has Yale whipped.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could see this guy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't take too much to be evil. Alright, so April, what's our next bit of news?
Josh Hutcherson is blonde again, and he is getting in shape for Catching Fire.
Yeah, so, I'll let you girls talk about this. Do you like him blonde? Do you like him with brown hair? What do you think?
Well, for PETA, it's good that he's blonde.
He better be blonde. He dyed his hair, like, brown again as soon as, like, the Hunger Games... Like, as soon as he finished shooting the Hunger Games, and then he just has to bleach it again. It's horrible for his hair.
Yeah, it's
how much of a time difference is there between, like, the ending of Hunger Games filming and start of Catching Fire, though, you know? Because if it was, like, 6 months, then why even... I wouldn't really bother dyeing your hair back. But if it's, like, a year or two, then...
Well,
know.
I mean, you gotta think, the movie came out in March, so it wrapped up probably before 2012 started... They only will begin this August, or not August, but this autumn. So, yeah, I could see him wanting to dive back for, you know, most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Elena, what's our next bit of news?
Okay. So, Philip Seymour Hoffman talks Plutarch in Catching Fire, and he says that the script is loyal to the book. So, that's good. And I think he's... referring to script being loyal to the book just with Plutarch, though.
Yeah, well,
but
I'm really excited.
It's the whole
I'm really excited to see Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, as Plutarch in Catching Fire, because if you didn't hear us last time, Philip Seymour Hoffman is actually an Oscar-winning actor. He's been many, many great films. Honestly, I think he's a bit too big for this series, but it doesn't matter because he's Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, he has a small part, so it's not like.
Yeah. No. So if he screws it up, it's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's not like he's
playing Katniss or anything.
Yeah.
And so, in news that makes me incredibly happy, because I've been wondering this for a while, an official map of Panem is slowly being released where the districts are located. And so, have you guys seen this?
Yeah, I have.
I mean, for me, this is probably most exciting Hunger Games news in a long time.
Yeah.
Because I know we've spent a long time discussing, you know, where each district is, what it could be. And now we're sort of getting it.
Yeah, and for forever there have been so many, like, fan maps. And now we're kind of getting an official thing. So
yeah.
That's really cool.
And so
I am underwater. I died.
Yes. So a quick recap. Basically, if you live on the coast, especially around Florida, most of the East Coast and most of the West Coast, I'm sorry, you have drowned.
Dang!
And, in fact, I am one of them, so, bye.
We all pretty much drowned, because Hurley's in Washington, Elena's in California, I'm in Connecticut, and you're in Virginia.
Yep.
So we all died, basically.
Pretty much. And I don't know if Hurley's like in East Washington or West Washington. I don't remember. But yeah, we all probably died. So.
Yeah. But if you are still alive, here are the current locations that have been announced, and see if you actually apply to it. So for District 12, which is probably what everybody wants to know, is Southern Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and that general area. Mostly around the Appalachian Mountains, as you have guessed. Yes, so we have 9 more districts, and as they come out, we'll make sure to tell you. Mm-hmm. All right, and for our last news story of the day, April?
Francis Lawrence will not direct Mockingjay Parts 1 and 2, and Lionsgate is already seeking new directors for each part.
Probably because he realizes how stupid it is that they're splitting it into 2 movies.
Yes.
And I'm sure you guys talked about that in past.
Yes, Elena, we've talked about it, but we haven't heard your opinions on it.
I think it is stupid. It's stupid. Because, okay, like, I seriously think they are just copying all the other films that have been cut into 2. I mean, think about it. There was Harry Potter, there was Breaking Dawn, there was... what other ones were there?
The Hobbit, except now it's 3.
Yeah, The Hobbit. Oh, yeah. I mean, so many movies are being split in 2 that do not need to be split in 2. Harry Potter was needed to be, but the other ones didn't. And especially Mockingjay, of all the books, like, I don't even know if they would have enough content for 1 movie. I mean, they would. Mm-hmm. It would be fine. But, I mean, it's a really kind of, like, the first half of the book is very slow, and there's not a whole lot that happens. And then only really in the, like, later last quarter of the book, maybe, does some real action happen. And that is the stuff that would be in the movie. The stuff before, they would shorten. So I don't know how on earth they're going to make it into 2 movies. Like, I just don't even know why. It's just all a money-making thing, but it's just ridiculous.
Yep, so I'm glad to see that all of Rebellion Radio is on the exact same page on this.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think? Like, do you think they'll try to keep a director in the same sort of general genre? Do you think they'll go for more higher-ups, for some more unknowns? What do you think?
As long as they don't go for the director of the first Twilight, anything's
okay. Well, I think it's interesting that each book will have a different director.
Yeah, and
maybe even each movie.
It could be interesting. Yeah. Like, you sort of get the Harry Potter effect, where many different directors bring their own sort of styles to it.
Yeah.
Honestly, for me, as long as you don't have the shaky cam, yeah. I'm fine.
Yeah. But I really did like the first Hunger Games movie, and I still do wish that all of them were being directed by Gary Ross, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, oh well.
So now our news segment is done. A lot of news this week. I think we've finally gone past the doldrums.
Oh, yeah.
And so now we are into our mailbag segment. So please make sure that you email us at comments@rebellionradiopodcast.com, and I guarantee you, we read through all the emails, but because we get so many of them, we can only read a few of them on the show. So Elena, can you please read our first comment?
All right, so this first email is from Annika Parker, and she says, "Hello, I was bored and decided to take you guys up on your very old challenge from a couple of episodes ago to find out about the names from the Hunger Games. I've written down all the information I could think of off the top of my head. Katniss and Prim are both named after flowers. The Katniss plant is colloquially known as the arrowhead plant due to its arrowhead-shaped leaves, which is almost certain a connection to Katniss being an archer. Primrose, on the other hand, is a small, delicate flower. Trinket means a small, cheap ornament, generally useless. Rue is a synonym for regret, while thresh means to beat something strongly, generally wheat, in order to separate the grain from the plant. I was reading a philosophy book and spotted the name Seneca, and then later Plutarch. I'm pretty sure Suzanne Collins took her gamekeeper names from ancient philosophers. There's not much correlation between the philosopher Plutarch and the Hunger Games Plutarch, but Seneca the Younger and Seneca the Elder were 2 philosophers from Rome. Seneca the Younger, an advisor to the Emperor Nero, was later accused of conspiring against Nero and forced to commit suicide, similar to Seneca in the Hunger Games." Very interesting.
Yes, so thank you, Annika.
She wrote down, "I've written down all the information I could think off the top of my head." If that's all from the top of her head, that's very impressive.
Yeah, really. I'm so glad our fans are more willing to do this research than we are.
Yes, exactly.
But I really found it interesting what the name Thresh meant. Because it really does apply with District 11, and, you know, it's the agriculture district.
Yeah, and especially there's, like, two connections there.
Yeah, and especially the Seneca connection. That was really impressive.
Mm-hmm. I also like Trinket, because it's generally useless.
That's pretty accurate. So, and I think officially we can say stop sending us in the meaning of names. I think we've dissected every name in the Hunger Games. It's official, Suzanne Collins, you are a genius.
Mm-hmm.
But you're done acknowledging it.
Yeah, our fans are smart, but now, and we appreciate their effort.
April, please take us away with the next email.
Alright, well, this is a comment from Katniss12, and she says, "Hey, Rebels. Okay, on the VHS tapes of the games in the book, it says Effery got the tapes from Katniss and PETA, so maybe she just pulled a few strings, being a capital citizen, and used her standing as a mentor to get them. And more on Effie, I looked up the name Effie, and it actually means good speech, which I think applies to Effie very well since she talks so much, and she is always talking to people trying to get sponsors for Katniss and PETA. Anyway, thanks for being awesome, and don't stop making podcasts. May the odds be ever in your favor, Katniss book. P.S. Alex, I thought your favorite band was Neutral Milk Hotel."
Alright, so two things. One, thank you for, I think, our last name. Although, this one actually was very interesting. Effie Goodspeech, she is an announcer.
So well, I mean, all of them have been interesting, but, like, we get, like, you know, we get, like, the same ones, like, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get, like, ones that we're like, oh, we never heard of that one.
So, altogether, Effie Trinket is Goodspeech useless.
Useless Goodspeech.
Useless speech, yeah. And that describes her character pretty well.
Yeah, and her purpose.
Yeah, almost like Draco Malfoy being Bad Dragon.
Yeah.
And second, as to your PS, Katniss 12, Neutral Milk Hotel is in fact my third favorite band. My first favorite band being Pink Floyd, my second being Radiohead, my third being Neutral Milk Hotel, and my fourth being Arcade Fire. And that's enough of my music taste for one episode. Alright, and okay. Speaking of music, now is the time for Fan Hurrah. This is where you guys, the fans, can submit your own tunes to be sampled on the show.
Okay, well, this was submitted by listener Katniss12, who we just read an email from, actually. And she chose Fix You by Coldplay. And she says that she chose it because I think it sounds like it could be PETA talking to Katniss. Like the chorus when it says, "I will try to fix you," he will try to help her get over her bad memories of the games. Other lyrics are, "When you get what you want but not what you need, she gets the thing she wants, like Gail, only to realize it's not what she needs. Stuck in reverse, she can't stop thinking about the past, the games. And when you lose something you can't replace, Prim or PETA and the part of him that didn't want to kill her. Overall, it just seems like a Katniss song. Thanks for making your awesome podcast." So that's from Katniss12.
Yep. So thank you, Katniss12, and please enjoy Fix You by Coldplay.
Lights will guide you.
So now it is time for Chapter Chat for Catching Fire. And so we'll be reading Chapters 15 and Chapter 16 for this week. And spoiler alert, as always, we'll be spoiling every aspect of these chapters and many future plot points for the other books. So, Elena.
Okay.
Elena, okay. Please take us away with Chapter 15.
Okay, so Katniss is with her team, who are prepping her for the opening ceremonies for the games. Her team is super upset that she has to return to the games, and they can barely keep it together. She keeps thinking about how the people of Panem feel about the victors going back into the arena.
Yeah. So this is the point that we sort of brought up last week about how all these tributes that have won, the victors, these are sort of viewed as, you know, the heroes, the celebrities of Panem. So this is kind of a little bit of a small-scale example of, you know, how everybody's a bit upset by this. And this could actually be an indicator to rebellion to come, since, you know, the capital is kind of pissing off their own citizens.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, if President Snow is so keen on not inciting a rebellion, then why is he using this strategy, putting this these people who all the capital citizens love, and all people in the throughout the country love all these people, putting them all together and making them kill each other? That doesn't really boost the capital's esteem the opinions.
I was just saying it's the next step up from, you know, Survivor, Celebrity Survivor.
Yeah. So, Cinna comes in and helps Katniss hold it together. He's clearly upset too, but says that he channels his frustration into his work. They go to lunch, and afterward, Cinna helps Katniss get ready. He braids her hair and makes her up her face with bold colors. Her outfit looks like a plain black cat suit, but Cinna shows her its secret weapon. It lights up as though it's on fire. Katniss appears to be a smoldering coal and thinks it looks amazing. And she draws courage from the outfit.
So, guys, what do you think this will look like in the movie?
I really hope it doesn't come off, like, really weird, you know? Because it could be done really badly.
Yeah, like, when we saw the fire dress from Hunger Games, it didn't look exactly how it's described in the book.
No.
I don't think we touched on that too much. But.
Yeah, we haven't really talked about that, but, yeah. I mean, the way that it was in the movie, it was fine. It was, like, sufficient, I guess, but it wasn't, like, amazing.
Yeah, is this just going to be some CGI fest?
Hopefully they won't, like, do this in a way that's, like a sparkly dress or something and that's it. You know, because it could be really lame if they decided to.
Mm-hmm.
And Katniss leaves him and makes her way to the gathering place where all the other tributes were waiting. Finnick comes up to her, and he's one of the most famous and celebrated tributes in Panem, and he is dressed in quite the revealing costume. He's exquisitely beautiful and one of the youngest people ever to win the games. He's had advantages going into his games, but none more so than his good looks. Since the games, she knows he's had tons of lovers and lived a decadent capital lifestyle.
So, Elena, you were not here last week, but last week we discussed the casting of Finnick. Do you see this?
Yes. Yes, I did.
It's still a rumor at this point, apparently.
No, it's been...
It hasn't
it's
been
official.
Confirmed.
It's on IMDb.
I don't know. Person got mad at us in the comments because we were spreading rumors about this.
Well, is it official?
Even if it's just still a rumor at this point, what do you think of Finnick?
I honestly, I tried avoiding... seeing who they cast for the longest time because I knew I'd be disappointed. Because, you know... I don't know how many... I haven't really been following how fans have been reacting. But I was, thinking beforehand, you know, no matter who they cast, most people will be disappointed. Because, you know, Finnick is described as being, amazing. He's supposed to look absolutely gorgeous, practically. And, you know, no matter who they cast, people will be disappointed because you have this idea in your head and it doesn't meet the expectation. But anyway... So when I first was okay, I'll finally... This was, maybe less than a week ago that I finally decided to just see who it was. I actually was not disappointed at all. I was oh, he looks very good for Finnick. He actually looked quite a lot like how I pictured him. So I was very happy about that casting, actually. So far. So.
And here's a question for both of you. What did you guys originally think when you read Finnick for the first time? What did you think of his character? You think he... die straight off, or do you think he'd actually be a character?
I thought he would be a love interest. A third love
I don't remember.
So we have a love quartet?
Pretty much.
I remember thinking that later on, but not when you first met him. I remember thinking that, once they were all in the arena, but I definitely didn't think that at the beginning, though.
Well, personally, whenever, a new character comes in, I'm they're gonna die. So...
Yeah, when I first read, Finnick, I thought he would sort of play the role of Rue, in the fact that it will be something that Katniss gets really close to and that gets killed and everybody will be upset. But spoilers for the rest of the series, he lives past Catching Fire. Not through all Mockingjay, but he lives a lot longer than I suspected. And did you like him as the series progressed?
Oh, I love Finnick. He's my favorite character. I mean, besides Katniss. Katniss is my first favorite character, and then Finnick. I love Finnick. Woo!
Finnick.
Finnick definitely grew on me as the series went on. fact, I kind of wish that Katniss had ended up with him.
He's like the, you know, like everybody has that one person in like the trilogy who they love. Like some people it's Peeta or Katniss or whoever who you're like, oh yeah, that person is awesome. You know, Finnick is my person. I love Finnick.
Can't argue with that.
Oh, so Finnick flatters Katniss, but she's unimpressed. He tells her that he has collected other people's dark secrets from the Capitol. So he leaves, and Peeta appears. They commiserate about what's happened to the other tributes, and they've all turned quite weird since winning. And then they get into their transport for the ceremony. They turn on their costumes and look like they're on fire, which is really going over well with the audience. So it seems Peeta and Katniss are the standouts of the initial portion of the ceremony. They return to the training center and meet some of the other tributes, including Chaff and Cedar from District 11, Rue's home. Chaff is missing a hand, and Cedar is in her 60s. They both hug Katniss. So they head up to their rooms, and on the way, they meet Johanna, the tribute from District 7.
So, akin to what I asked earlier about Finnick, what do you guys think of Johanna, both the actress portraying her, Jenna Malone, and her character?
I like the actress. But I'm just curious, in the book, is Johanna described as having blonde hair? Is that just in my head?
I think that's just in your head. I always imagine her with dark hair.
I thought she was a redhead.
I always... yeah. So, I mean, if it wasn't for her brown hair, I would have... If she was blonde, I would think she's perfect, but... her face is good. It's, like, very kind of angular, you know? And so I think that kind of fits...
Yeah, and I recognize her from being in Donnie Darko, which, if you guys remember, is a movie that I was watching when I missed a podcast. But it is worth it, because I now know her acting abilities, and she did a very good job in Donnie Darko, even though it wasn't the most large role. So, honestly, I can definitely see her as Johanna. Any thoughts, April?
Well, I don't really know how she acts or anything, because I've never seen her in anything. Like, her name sounds familiar, so... But, yeah, like I said, I thought Johanna was a redhead.
So, she strips naked and flirts with Peeta during the elevator ride up to their rooms, which really
That's
irks
why
Katniss.
She's a cool kid.
This is the moment that I fell in love with Johanna.
Of course it was.
But
I thought it was funny. I thought it was hilarious.
Yes, this was actually one of the first moments of just, like, comedy that happened in the series.
It was just so unexpected that you couldn't help but, like, laugh, or you didn't know, like, what else to do. You're like...
Yeah, I mean, this could be a very, very funny scene in the movie.
I don't know if they're... Do you think they're going to do it in the movie?
Yes, I know exactly
they
how they would
do it
in the
movie.
You know, just cut to a shot of, like, clothes falling down, then just, like, a shoulders up shot, and just Katniss just sort of frowning, and Peeta just smirking. But
so many gifts.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I remember how when we were reviewing the movie for the first time, how I said that people in the audience were laughing very often for the worst reasons?
Yep.
Well, now they can actually laugh, and I won't be pissed off at them.
Yeah.
And one last thought. Do you think this is sort of another thing about the Capitol? Like, you know, everybody compares Panem to ancient Rome. Mm-hmm. And it's known in ancient Rome there's sort of an open sexuality thing. Do you think it's sort of a product of Panem, or do you think it's just Johanna?
I don't know. I think it's kind of like both. Like, there is definitely an aspect of, like, more being more openness, I guess. You know, you can, like, be more open and, like, be more, like, flamboyant and stuff and whatever about all that, but also a part of it is probably just Johanna, too, you know? When Katniss and Peeta are by themselves, he tells her that all the other tributes are just trying to mess with her. So, Haymitch and Effie come in, and the four go to the area where they'll be staying. Inside are their two servants, both Avoxes, people who have been punished by the Capitol and have had their tongues cut out. One of them is Katniss's old friend, Darius. And it's horrible to her. It's horrifying to her for her to realize that he has been punished in this way. And you have to suspect, or at least I'm pretty sure, that the Capitol placed Darius with them specifically because they knew it would freak Katniss out.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm trying to remember, was he the old peacekeeper?
Well, he was one of the younger peacekeepers in District 12, and he was known to actually talk with Katniss and sort of interact with her, so this is, I'd say this is Capital's sort of way of just really, truly messing with Katniss, showing that, you know, they'll mutilate their own. So thank you, Elena. And now, for Chapter 16. So all the people who know Darius are incredibly upset at what's happened to him, but Katniss knows that they have to stay calm and act like it's no big deal. No, they say, keep calm, carry on, and go into the Hunger Games. So Katniss can't bear it, though, and she blames herself for what happened, and so she holds up in her room. But at dinner, the team regroups. At one point, Katniss creates a diversion so she can touch Darius' hand. They have a special moment without speaking, where they try to convey their feelings. Very touching moment. But then, as a group, everyone heads to view some video of the events they just attended. Katniss thinks about how cruel the opening ceremonies are. She's trying to stay away from PETA. And, just random, but I think everybody knows that the Olympics are going on, no matter what corner of the globe you listeners are from. All the opening ceremony stuff that's been happening, I think all of our listeners know. Have you guys noticed any Hunger Games-esque thing to this? I mean, it's been since The Hunger Games was published, it was, you know, right before won the Olympics in 2008. And so now that Hunger Games is pretty mainstream in the public consciousness, for you guys, I couldn't help but think about how everything's sort of Hunger Games-esque. Can you?
Well, that's actually kind of something I wanted to ask you guys, like, similar. Do you think that we should be comparing it? Like, I don't know. There's like, a part of me that's going, yes, I understand where your connections are going, but at the same time, I'm also thinking, like, maybe we're just, like, looking way too deep into it.
Well, I mean, we are a podcast about The Hunger Games. We have to try to connect things.
But, like, everywhere, like, even people who, like, aren't fans of our podcast, just, like, normal people who aren't as nerdy as us, you know, we'll be talking about, oh, it's like The Hunger Games. And I'm kind of thinking, like, should we really, like, be looking that deep into things, though? Like, I don't know. I don't feel like it should be taken that seriously, but I don't know.
I mean, obviously it's a piece of fiction, and we shouldn't really be taking it too much to heart. But at the same time, it is a terrifying prospect of what the future could become. And the fact that we can see even the smallest aspect, maybe it encourages us to be a bit more wary and make sure that this doesn't actually happen in the future.
That's true. Although, to me, it's just like, well, the Olympics have been going on for how long?
So yeah, I think by the time that this podcast is out, the Olympics may even be over.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, some of the things with the Olympics is that, you know, everybody watches them. A lot of these athletes all these athletes have been training for a long time. I mean, it is a bit of a stretch in some aspects, but at the same time, yeah, we're a Hunger Games podcast. We're trying to make things work. If the listeners have anything to say about connections between the Olympics and the Hunger Games, please email us in. We'd be interested to hear your thoughts. And maybe we're all just crazy trying to make connections that nobody else sees. Or maybe we're onto something. She goes to bed and has terrible dreams about other people's mouths. Interesting dreams. So going to breakfast the next day, Katniss dreads the meetings where she'll discuss the strategies for the games. She delays as long as she can before meeting Haymitch and PETA. Haymitch tells them that the strategy has to be getting allies while they train with the other tributes, otherwise they won't make it through. They also have to keep up the appearances of a love affair. Katniss isn't into that, but Haymitch pushes. They should choose the allies who will be helpful during the games. That's the only way to win. Then PETA and Katniss go down to the training center to meet with the other tributes. They see two others there, Brutus and Oberia?
Mm-hmm.
And Oberia. And Oberia is pretty vicious. They begin training. There are different areas around the room they can visit to learn different skills. Katniss practices tying knots and briefly encounters Finnick. She then heads over to an area to practice lighting fires without matches. She decides to try to befriend the two people from District 3 who are also practicing, Wyrus and BT. They're kind of weird, but Katniss likes them. So Wyrus and BT open up a little, and the three try speaking code to see if there's been any rebel activity in the three different districts. So do you guys have any thoughts on this? That the other tributes, other victors, actually are also aware of the rebellions that are happening around Panem.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that the victors have a little bit more of like insight into the like uprisings and stuff just because they are victors? Like that status kind of like makes it easier for them to receive information about what's going around the capital rather mm-hmm. than if they were just like a normal citizen.
Right. I mean, I think they're public icons, and therefore maybe, you know, the government would say something like, oh, by the way, everything is peachy in your district, and make sure everybody knows that. Like, they might be getting some small little hints, you know, trying to make sure they keep morales up in their districts.
Yeah. But I'm sure that because they're victors, like, you know, something, stuff similar to what happened with Snow and Katniss, probably sometimes I feel like, the government might go up to them and tell them, you need to do this to make things seem happier, because, so, like, they can kind of just deduce what has been going on because of being confronted and told, you have to act this way and do this, because if you don't, we're going to kill you and all your family members. So,
yay! Politics. On the way to lunch, BD and Wires point out an interesting fact to Katniss. The game makers are there observing the tributes, but they've got an invisible force field set up around them for protection. Katniss learns that each of these fields has a weak spot. And so I would like to say, foreshadowing. So much so.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not much more to say about that. So, they end up sharing a table at lunch. Katniss has a brief moment alone with Peeta, and they confer about whom they want as their allies. They both want different people, and they're still a little uneasy with each other after the brief disagreement they had. After they eat, Katniss meets up with some other tributes. She doesn't want to team up with some of the obvious choices, like the in-shape pair from District 1. She's interested in the older woman, Mags, who doesn't really have a chance but in the arena, but understands the principle of sacrifice. Once again, foreshadowing. They practice making fishhooks. After that, Katniss lets loose on the archery range and blows everyone away with what a great shot she is. And the phrase, blows everyone away, is once again foreshadowing. Isn't this chapter just great? So everyone wants to be her ally, but she has her own particular opinions. They keep training. On the last day, each tribute has to face the game makers alone and get a rating for the games. Peeta and Katniss are up last, as always. They commiserate about how they don't want to have to... blah, blah, blah. They commiserate about how they don't want to have to be murderers again. Peeta goes first. He takes a long time. And Katniss doesn't know what happened, but when she goes in after him, everyone seems upset. A big portion of the floor has been hastily hidden. She decides she's going to make them even more upset if possible. So Plutarch seems to be uninterested, which pushes Katniss even more. Katniss makes a noose and hangs up one of the figurines they used to practice shooting. She writes on it in the name of the previous head game maker, Seneca Crane, using berry juice, and presents it to the other game makers, in what I think is one of the most badass moves Katniss ever does.
Totally. I just love Katniss.
This was like this was an awesome visual, and this will be really cool and terrifying and quite disturbing in the movie.
Completely. I think, like, it seems interesting to me that each instance that she's had, like, this situation where she gets to show off for the game makers and show them what she can do, each time she's had to really just go do something very bold. And this was definitely, probably, I'd say, like, two times as bold as the last one, because she's doing direct defiance to the Capitol.
She always kind of kills one of the game makers. Not literally always.
And it's always Seneca Crane, in a sense.
Yeah, that guy
almost
can't
shot him
in
the head the first time.
Yeah, so I think this will be a really cool scene to see in the movie. And every movie, in my opinion, has sort of one iconic moment, which people remember. Mm-hmm. I think this will probably be the moment in the film, because this is just... I found this really powerful.
Yeah. What would you say that iconic moment would be for the first movie?
The first one, I think it's District 11 watching Katniss and her doing the three-finger salute and everybody raising their hands after.
Just Rude's death in general.
Yeah. That's just my opinion, but my opinion's right because I'm on a podcast. So, now we have finished up chapter chat for the week. And so, so next week we'll be reading chapters 17 and 18. So please send us in your emails and thoughts on what you think of these chapters, and we look forward to reading them. So now is that time of the podcast, Hurrock, or Hunger Games Rock, in which we close each podcast with a musical selection from one of our hosts, with a song that we think fits the Hunger Games the best. So this week, please enjoy the great song that is Elena's pick, We Are Broken by Paramore. So Elena, please explain.
I chose this song because... I really feel like it captures the mood of, like, what needs to happen in the Capitol, because it's talking about how they've lost their innocence, and the Capitol definitely has lost their innocence and their, like, value of life, basically. So the song is kind of almost like a plea or a prayer, kind of, just like, I don't know, trying to fix all that has broken in their society, so Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Elena, for your pick. So, please enjoy Elena's pick, We Are Broken by Paramore. But before you get to hear that, be sure to visit RebellionRadioPodcast.com for everything about the show. You'll find handy links to our iTunes and Tumblr, and you can stay updated through our Facebook and Twitter, both at /RRPodcast, and discuss with our listeners in the comments. Contact us anything at all at comments@RebellionRadioPodcast.com. Thank you all very much for listening to our very special edition of Rebellion Radio. I promise next time Hurley will be back, and things will be back to normal, unless wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey.
Yep.
So, yeah. I've been Alex Bolova.
I'm Elena Thomas.
And I'm Anne Booker Santi.
Fight the Capitol and the Hunger. Join the Rebellion. Fight the Capitol and the Hunger, join the Rebellion. Yes! I've gotten to say it! Finally!
You said, I have been Alex Bolova.
I have been Alex. Fine.
Who are you being now?
Fine, alright. Here, Hurley, ready? I'm Alex Bolova. There.
No, you're not.
There you go.
Who are you?
That's who right. are my you? Tell us your identity.
My real name is Nicholas Citavello. There you go.
Hurley! Alex is gone.
Okay, yippee-ki-yay. All right, everybody listening? Everybody ready?
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope our listeners are listening.
Yes, are you listening, listeners?
Listeners, are you listening?
They speak, just listening, sing on the bus somewhere.
They all say in unison at the same time.
Yep. So 1, 2, 3.
No.
Exactly.
Oh wait, I'm not a listener. Well, I mean, not really.
Okay, so let's get this thing started.
It's so awkward.
Thank you, Hurley.
Thank you, Hurley. We love you, Hurley.
Yay, Hurley.
Don't edit me out.
Edits out everything Alex says in the whole entire episode.
That was just... Oh, that'd be weird.
And replaces it with his voice.
He just talks over it.
Or he, like, takes, like, your audio file and then, like, changes the pitch to, like, 10 octaves higher.
You should totally do that.
Because you can do that. You can. I've done it before. It's so funny.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so now I have to think of a clever transition back into Chapter Chat. All right, so now is time for Chapter Chat, in which we'll be discussing Chapter 16 and Chapter... darn it.
What's the next one? Oh, okay.
I said 16 instead of 15.
You don't vote for the next number after 17.
And... Yeah, every Paramore song basically applies to the Hunger Games.
Yeah,
we
pretty
figured
much.
That out.
When in doubt, just search Paramore.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank
that
you,
works.
Paramore, for being our official Harrock band.
Yep.
It's official.
This
yes.
podcast is sponsored them. By Paramore.
Yes, this podcast.
Also. Oh, sorry.
What?
Oh.
Why would you interrupt
oh,
me?
Snap. Oh.
Well, then. Well, anyway.